Hi, I'm Bob Tabor with www.learnvisualstudio.net. In this module, we'll introduce Azure Virtual Machines. And if you recall from way, way back in the first course, maybe the second or third module, I discussed the difference between platform as a service and infrastructure as a service. And I said that there's a lot of different ways that you can architect an application, a solution for a business problem. And the type of solution that you choose will be based on how much control that you need and how much responsibility that you're willing to take on. So, for example, with the platform as a service offering, like Azure Websites, for example, we created a website in Visual Studio. We deployed it up using Visual Studio's tools. It was very easy. And then we're pretty much done. I mean, the only other thing we had to do was decide if we wanted to turn on auto scaling or manually scale. But for the most part, we had really no other responsibilities in the system. All those mundane administrative tasks were taken care of by the Azure team. Now, that also means, however, that we were limited in the amount of control that we had over how that environment worked. So, for example, we couldn't install some custom third-party software on that computer that's hosting our website because we didn't have control of the environment. So, on the other end of the spectrum, we could always opt for an infrastructure as a service offering like Azure Virtual Machines, and that will give us total control over the operating system configuration, disk persistence, what software we can install on the server, and so on. Now, of course, that comes at a price. That means that we're responsible for server software installation and configuration and installing security patches and any other updates as well. So again, it's that balance between responsibility and control and how much tolerance we have for each. So when we talk about infrastructure as a service, we're really talking about Azure Virtual Machines and virtual networks. That comprises pretty much the entirety of Microsoft's infrastructure as a service offering. And so it's going to comprise the first half of this course as well. And virtual machines really represent the very first steps that most companies make into cloud computing before they start diving in and architecting software solutions around platform as a service offerings. They instead will perform this operation on their existing systems called lift and shift. So they'll take existing software systems on their on-premise servers and they'll lift them and shift them to a virtualized environment inside of Azure as a first step, getting their feet wet to kind of extend the data center. However, they don't really have any huge commitment to that data center. They could move everything back if they wanted to. So this series is all about virtual machines and virtual networks. Let's define exactly what a virtual machine is. First of all, a virtual machine is simply an emulation of physical hardware. It's software that's acting like it's hardware so that you can run software, operating system software, basically in the context of another operating system, the host operating system and the guest operating system. So kind of to get a little bit deeper than that, there's the software system called a hypervisor. It's often referred to as well as a virtual machine monitor, and it runs typically on a cluster of physical hardware. Now we can run a hypervisor on our own local computer or on a really beefed up server, but typically we're talking about multiple machines that are clustered together. And so then there's this abstraction layer between the physical machines and the guest operating system, and that's the hypervisor software that I talked about a moment ago. That abstraction layer is sometimes called fabric. If you think of each of the individual computers as a thread in a larger piece of fabric, well, that's kind of the notion here. So the fabric layer allows you to combine the computing power of many physical machines, what Microsoft often refers to as commodity hardware, relatively cheap computers. And it combines them all together, clusters them all together to give you basically a lot of computing power when combined. And so then you go out and you say, okay, I need a new virtual machine that emulates this kind of processor. It has this much memory. It'll have this much disk space and so on. And then Hypervisor or Hyper-V, which is Microsoft's version of the Hypervisor software, Hyper-V will go out and it will allocate all of those resources to a new emulated host, and then you begin to install the operating system in that host. So it's allocating a small fraction of all of the computing power that's been clustered together to host a single emulated system. So to the guest operating system that gets installed, all it sees is a computer. It doesn't know if it's a physical computer or if it's an emulation of a physical computer. And so this little technique of clustering computers together and then allocating some of the resources here and some of them there, it allows a company to quickly provision new emulated servers or to shift resources on demand. So say, for example, you have one application that is under heavy load right now, and you have other applications that are inside of your virtualized environment they're not under heavy load right now. You can shift resources and scale out and scale up the virtual servers that need more horsepower, more RAM and hard drive space, or whatever the case might be. And so this allows you to effectively use less hardware in the long run because you're just shifting what is working on a smaller set of hardware around as needed. And so there's a couple of different benefits. I've already gone into one of them, quickly provision and to scale. Another huge benefit is that if one of the physical machines in the fabric go down, so maybe a motherboard failure or network card burns out, the fabric layer will begin to transition all guest virtual machines that utilize some part of that physical computer to the other hardware in the cluster. So you minimize downtime due to hardware outages. Now, you might think that this description sounds a lot like Microsoft Azure, and you're correct. Azure is just a virtual environment on a very, very large scale. Azure has been described basically as a cloud layer on top of a number of commodity Windows Server systems. So the fabric layer uses Windows Server and a specialized version of Hyper-V for their own custom use. And together, it's known as the Microsoft Azure Hypervisor, and it provides virtualization services to us all, whoever needs a new virtual machine or anything else inside of Azure. And the idea of virtual machines and virtualization has been around for a very long time. Many companies already have a virtualized environment that they can use to move available computer resources around to the different servers as the need arises. The only difference here is that whenever you worked in a virtualized environment with Microsoft Azure, there's no cash outlay for new hardware. Microsoft's already made that investment. And furthermore, there's no need for the company's engineers and administrators to build competency and exert effort to manage that fabric layer. That's what Microsoft does for you. Instead, all of your engineering talent can focus its efforts on the applications that serve your business and just treat the Azure virtual machines themselves just like they were any other server in the company's networked environment. So besides the freedom from purchasing physical hardware, which most of it, let's be honest, it loses its value immediately after it leaves the factory, and besides the freedom from setting up and maintaining the virtualized management layer, companies can also, as a result, move more quickly. And this is one of the key benefits to using any cloud-based vendor like Microsoft Azure. Let's say, for example, that for whatever reason you need 100 new servers and you need them tomorrow. You can do that. You don't have to wait weeks and months. And what if you only need those 100 servers for like 3 days? Well, then you only pay for the 3 days that you need them. And then the last benefit to using Azure virtual machines over, let's say, on-premise virtual machines that I'm going to highlight here is that you have a vast number of base images to choose from. So whenever you create a new virtual machine, you can select from dozens of pre-configured virtual machine images in what they call this gallery. And the gallery hosts Windows images, various Linux images, and images that are pre-configured with SQL Server and SharePoint, and various third-party solutions like Oracle software and things of that nature. So this reduces the time to go live because a lot of those setup steps are already done. You might need to do some little configuration on them, but they're ready for you to use immediately. And you can even create your own images after you've configured everything so that if you need new virtual machines in the future, based on all your configuration changes, all you got to do, it'll show up in the gallery. We'll talk about this in just a moment. Very cool stuff. Okay, so let's talk money. One of the biggest considerations whenever you're utilizing virtual machines in Microsoft Azure is the cost. So just like every other Azure service, it really comes down to how much you're using. If you need more resources, you're going to pay more. If you need fewer resources, you're going to pay less. And so you can set up a really small virtualized environment for a couple bucks a month. Or if you need, thousands of virtual machines running in the cloud, then obviously you're going to pay a lot more for that. At the time that I record this, there are four basic components, and I'll give you a bonus, number five, that will affect pricing. So the first thing is whether you need Windows or Linux. Windows is more expensive. The next thing is the compute power in terms of how many processors, how much RAM, how much disk space. And let's talk about that more in just a minute. The third factor is the tier of services that you want to make available to your virtual machines. So, for example, there are services like load balancing and auto scaling and several more. And these are available at a premium. So there's like two there's two tiers. There's a basic tier, it's pretty much bare bones, and then the standard tier gives you access to all these other services. And the fourth component that will affect pricing is the data center that you deploy your virtual machines into. So some virtual machines, regions in the world will cost more. I'm not sure why, but it just that it will affect costs. And then there's that bonus fifth component as well. So I mentioned a moment ago that there are pre-configured images that have like SQL Server or Oracle already installed on them. Well, you're going to pay a little more money for virtual machines that already have pre-configured software, like SharePoint, SQL Server, Oracle, whatever. So you're paying a little bit extra for the license to use that software. Okay, I said let's come back to compute power. I want to talk about that for a moment. You have many options to choose from, and they break down into series of offerings. So, for example, there's an A series. Let's talk about that for a moment. In the A series, there's like A0, A1, A2, A3, A4, A5, A6, A7, A9. I think there's just nine. And they really, the zero has the least amount of RAM, least amount of processing power. The nine has the most inside of that series. So typically, the A series is configured in such a way to be general purpose. It's not recommended for any production environment applications. It's really intended to be just used for development and for testing purposes. Maybe some sort of running a bunch of continuous integration unit tests out in the cloud, on an ongoing basis. That sort of thing is what it's good for. Then there are the D series virtual machines, and these are faster. They use solid state hard drives, for example, instead of the platters. They use faster CPUs. And then finally, there is the heavy duty G series. And this is the fastest. It uses the most modern hardware, and it can scale up to massive amounts of CPU and RAM and storage space. And these are only available in limited data centers at the time that I record this. They're fairly new. Maybe that's the only reason why, but I believe more are coming online. That's just something to check on. And again, I guess in that regard, keep in mind that this information is likely to change on a frequent basis. So you always want to just refer to the pricing page. I got a little link for you there that you can get to it very quickly. And since we're talking about money, let's also discuss two other items. First of all, even though that pricing page talks about a per hour charge, you're really only charged on a per minute basis. So if you only need a virtual machine for 27 minutes, you're only going to pay for the prorated version of that hour, roughly a little less than half of whatever that hourly charge would typically be. And then finally, you have to be careful and make sure that you know that when your virtual machine is running, you're paying Microsoft. If you don't want to pay Microsoft, then you need to shut down the machine. Now, you used to have to delete the machine a long time ago in order to save money. As long as it was allocated to you, you had to pay. But fortunately, they changed that policy. Now, if it's shut down, you're not paying. You might be paying for storage space and other things where all of your drives are sitting on, like Azure storage blobs, but you're not paying for the virtual machine to be running at that time. Okay, so whenever you create a new virtual machine, like we're going to do in the very next module, you're going to get two disks. There's going to be an operating system disk and a temporary disk. So what's the difference between the two? Well, the operating system disk is obviously going to host the operating system. The temporary disk is intended for temporary storage for like caching, like page file caching that the operating system might use in order to speed things up. And that temporary disk is unreliable for long-term storage. And the reason it's unreliable is because it's actually a physical disk that is located within the chassis of the physical server on which your virtual machine is currently hosted. So if your virtual machine for some reason gets moved to another server because of the unavailability of a given rack or machine, then you're going to lose all the data on that temporary drive. So we're going to see these drives and how they're mapped inside of our virtual machine when we actually create a new virtual machine in the next module. And also, whenever you provision a virtual machine, you're really getting a copy of a virtual hard drive. And these are one of several pre-configured virtual hard drives, or VHDs, and they're called an image. And the image is a template that's copied to a new virtual hard drive disk. And the disk is what your virtual machine boots up from as you start it up. So clearly it's an essential piece of the puzzle. And there are two types of persistent disks. There's an operating system disk, which obviously holds the operating system. It's persistent. You can store things on it and it will always be there. And then there's the data disk. And this is really the preferred place where you would put long-term data. And they're both comprised of page blobs in Azure Storage. And since they're page blobs, you get all the advantages of using Azure Storage blobs, like high availability and durability and geo-redundancy and things like that. And these disks are mounted as drives on a virtual machine. Now, in the Windows operating system, the operating system disk is mounted as the C drive, as we would expect. In Linux, it's mounted as the /dev/sda1 partition that's used as the root directory. And then, as we'll look and see in the next module, the D drive is the temporary disk that I mentioned a moment ago that you would use for temporary purposes. The operating system's using it to cache things out, but you might also choose to use that to put some cached information that you don't expect to be there on a permanent basis. Because if you want a more long-term solution, you would attach one or more data disks. And I'm going to demonstrate how to do this in an upcoming module. Once you attach a disk, it's going to look like a blank hard drive, just as if you took a blank hard drive that you bought from Best Buy and you stuck it in your computer. It's going to need to be initialized, and then it's going to need a partition, and then you're going to need to format that partition. Same thing here. It's just a virtual hard drive that gets installed. So we'll demonstrate how to do that in an upcoming module. So whenever you provision a new virtual machine, you're going to want to connect to it, and you want to manage it somehow. And you'll want to allow applications to connect to it, to use any services that it exposes, and so on. So by default, virtual machines are completely locked down, with the exception of connections that are allowed through a certain endpoint that allows you to do remote desktop. So the remote desktop protocol is enabled, but everything else is shut down. And so in order to communicate via other mechanisms, whether it be FTP or HTTP, or for Microsoft specific products like SQL Server Management Studio, you have to enable those endpoints in Azure. So an endpoint is simply a mapping that's created in the Azure Load Balancer to your virtual machine on a given port. We'll talk about the Load Balancer in an upcoming module. Whenever you create an endpoint in the Azure portal, you're actually configuring the Azure Load Balancer to allow traffic from the internet to come to your virtual machine, and you're creating a mapping between public ports on the Azure Load Balancer to ports on your virtual machine. And so, like most of the virtual machine related tasks, it's really easy to configure. Conceptually, as long as you get over the conceptual hurdle, the how do I is extremely simple. And I'm going to demonstrate how to do some of these things in upcoming modules. Now, once your machine is actually provisioned, it will be provisioned with two IP addresses. One will be for internet-facing communication, and one will be for private communication inside of Azure only. So we're going to spend an entire module explaining the various IP addresses and how they work, And we're going to talk about the Azure Load Balancer and the internal load balancer and the roles that they play. And I briefly mentioned auto-scaling as a feature of the standard service tier just in passing a few moments ago. I want to talk about the Azure VM's scaling story. First of all, you can scale up within a given class and tier of servers. So, for example, I can scale an A0 to A3 just by selecting it from a drop-down list box. However, Microsoft recommends that you scale out rather than scaling up. In other words, you should choose to scale out and have additional servers that have the same basic configuration instead of beefing up a single server, making it go from A0 to, you know, G10. Which is not even possible, but let's just say, for example, it was. I don't even know if there's a G10. Microsoft recommends using more of the same configuration rather than one huge server. And one of the reasons why you want to do that is so that you can have an availability set. And an availability set will help to keep your application running even if one of the servers goes down for some reason. So again, it's really easy to configure. The conceptual hurdle is the only thing that stands in your way, and we're going to explain more about that and demonstrate how to set up availability sets in an upcoming module. And as we're nearing the end here, I spoke a moment ago about how you can make a clone of your configured virtual machine complete with any attached disks that you've set up, which can be used as an image to create new virtual machines. It even shows up in the virtual machine gallery so that you can choose it in the future if you need another virtual machine that's configured exactly the same way. So we'll talk about configuring virtual machines images in an upcoming module. And I believe that's all that I really had to say. So to recap, I hope you can see what's possible with Azure Virtual Machines. And now the only thing that's left is for us to dive deeper to understand more about some of the concepts and actually get our hands dirty and work through some examples of how to set them up and configure them and what features that are available and what does that mean and how do we set those up and take advantage of them and so on. So we'll start down that path and we'll take this baby for a spin starting in the very next module. See you there. Thank you.